Hello and welcome to today's Global Podcast. Today we held it in English because I have a very special international guest. And before we jump into the introduction of our guest, I want to say something, because being a civil engineer means having a passion for buildings, structure analysis, and especially precise calculations. But entering an industry with such a long and diverse history isn't that easy. And our guest today, Thanos, supports civil engineers in starting their careers and shares his own experiences as a consulting engineer with everyone who is just as enthusiastic about structural engineering as he is. And what I really like are his, let's say, weekly tests and quizzes about structural engineering systems, where the structural engineer can always prove his skills in structure analysis. And I think we will also jump into this topic. But before we do this, Thanos, thank you for being here. Welcome to our Global Podcast.
Thank you very much for having me, Daniel. It's a great honor to be here.
Hallo und herzlich willkommen zum Global Podcast, der Podcast rund um das Thema Bau. Ich bin froh, dass du dabei bist. Los geht's. Thanos, I have already said something about you, but it would be the best if you could introduce yourself. So who are you and what are you doing?
Yeah, so a few things about me. So as you can imagine, I'm originally from Greece. Everything about me speaks Greece. So originally from Greece, I studied in the Greek university civil engineering back in the day. I finished in 2017. Then in 2019, I came to the UK to pursue a PhD in civil engineering. And since September of 2023, I have been working in consultancy, first with WSP and now with ARAP in Glasgow. That's more or less it about me, you know, the small stuff.
Okay, yeah, I think these companies are very known in the fields of structural engineers or in general in consulting, planning, especially when doing construction projects. Maybe we jump step before. So you have studied civil engineering and I always ask the same question. So what was the motivation to study civil engineering? Yeah.
So I think it was a few things. So first of all, my father back in Greece, he has his own excavation company. So I was always familiar, you know, with the construction sector. I always knew that. So he had bought me when I was like very, very young. He had bought me my own small excavator that I was riding on. Plus, there are so many pictures of me going into his own excavations when I'm like 2 or 3 years old. So I think he pushed me quite a lot in this specific industry, first of all. Plus, I was always relatively good with numbers. So that helps a bit as well. But I think one thing that not a lot of people know about me is that I was considering to become an architect as well back in the day when I was in high school. So I was in between, you know, do I go to the science stuff more or to the artistic stuff more? So I decided to go with the more science stuff to study civil engineering eventually.
Okay. And then you have developed, let's say, a little bit, a fable, a passion for a structure analysis. So how did you come to this topic, structure analysis?
Okay, so this is another interesting story about it. So the last time I saw bending moment diagrams before I started working in the industry was in 2017. Because after that, you know, I went to do a PhD in civil engineering. We didn't have a lot. I didn't see any bending moment diagram stuff. So when I was interviewing for a specific company, for ARAP, basically, when I was interviewing for ARAP back in 2023, they gave me like 20 different exercises in bending moment diagrams. And I had only one correct, only specifically one correct example. 19 examples were not correct. So that means that I lost that job, basically. So at that point, I'm like, okay, first of all, I'm going to relearn again bending moment diagrams, shear force diagrams. And secondly, I'm going to start sharing that online so that other people that are in my place they won't be in that place, you know, in the future. So I can help them a bit, you know. That's how it started, more or less.
Okay. And after you have seen, let's say, for the first time again, these structural diagrams or structural structural systems with a bending moment diagram, so, and you could not solve it, how did it feel?
It didn't feel very nice, to be honest with you. It felt like, you know, it's like a missed opportunity, you could say. Okay, plus, apart from missed opportunity, it's like when you start working in the industry as well, because you always use these types of formulas and these types, you have to have this thinking about the fundamentals. So you need to start from the scratch, basically. So it's like not only a missed opportunity in terms of you know, a possible job position, but it's a missed opportunity on starting from the right foot when you start working in the industry as a graduate, per se. So it's a lot of missed stuff. So a lot of, I should have done better there, you know.
Okay. And now you are also posting these kind of examples on LinkedIn. And this is also the reason why a lot of people are commenting, contributing to your posts, myself included, because I also like to do them. So how did you decide, okay, not solving just for me, but also when and why this idea happened that you also post this on LinkedIn?
So I think I first started posting back in August of 2024. So I don't know, you probably are aware of Dr. Javed Qureshi. So he is like, he's a professor in London. So he started doing that stuff and I really liked that. And I'm like, okay, why don't I do the same thing? Because first of all, it helps me understand structural analysis better. But secondly, it helps other people understand structural analysis better. Plus, it will give them a platform because, you know, when someone comments something that has value for other people, in a relatively at least big platform, other people will see it and they will get value from that person, or that person will be highlighted as well. So I do find that these types of posts give value to a lot of people, me included, but everyone else as well, in many different aspects, I would say. Mm-hmm. I don't know if I have answered your question, but you know.
Absolutely. In my opinion, it is an added value, definitely, for the platform, but also for the community of structural engineers. And yeah, they can, you give them also the chance to prove themselves, yeah, if they can still do it and are allowed to do structure analysis. I find it quite interesting because when we hire here at Lua, we're also doing something similar. I give them, let's say, 3-4 examples of structural systems, and they have to draw me the moment diagram. Yeah, they don't have to calculate something, but they have to draw me a qualitative moment diagram. And it's always quite interesting to see really a lot of different results. Yeah, although the people are calculating in the industry for 5 years, five up to 10 years, any structural projects, they cannot manage it because they are used to, let's say, do this only on the computer, yeah, but never recapitulate it. Yeah. So do you have here also some, let's say, feedback you would like to share, especially for people who are maybe, let's say, pretty new into this job, and maybe also for people who are longer in this? How is your feedback here? Or let's say, give some insights here.
So, okay, what I would say, even though it might sound a bit boomer, so what I would say is that I think I find in myself, I find that when I do calculations by hand, even if it's like bending moment diagrams, or even if it's whatever, if I want to design a beam, whatever it might be, if I do calculations by hand, I feel that I learn and understand concepts a bit better than if I try to model something. That's on me. And I think in the past I had read one or two papers that seemed to be arguing that this is the case, that as humans, we are more inclined to learn when we do something by hand rather than just doing it like do a model of that. So I usually try to do stuff by hand and not rely on software, because otherwise it's difficult for me to learn. Maybe for other people it's not, but for me it certainly is, I would say. So I would say that my suggestion would be try to at least once in every, I don't know, task or exercise you might have, try to do some hand calculations rather than just simply put stuff inside like a software program and expect a great output from it.
Yeah, completely agree with you. At the end, the software is just a tool like a calculator you can use for your daily work. But at the end, it's always your responsibility to evaluate the results. Yeah. And if you cannot interpret and evaluate the results, then it's pretty bad. But it's basically your job as an engineer, because you always take the responsibility for your doing here. I would like to jump a little bit into your daily projects. So how is it to be a structural engineer? Maybe for the our English community, say something about your daily life. What do you are doing as structural engineer?
My daily life. So I'm specifically a consultant. So 99.9% is about I'm in an office basically. So what my usual day would be? So potentially a lot of markups, you know, if you want to, I don't know, communicate your designs to a different discipline or to a client, you will do a few markups, design intent, you will do some very easy sections and stuff like that. That's one thing that I would do either by hand or by specific PDF software. I might do some modeling, 3D modeling with different stuff. If I want to like create the frame of my structure per se, you have a lot of 3D modeling. Or I will have a few meetings either with the design team or with the client or with just colleagues. So I would say that mainly what I do as a structural engineer is a lot of different things. I think engineering in general, not only structural, but engineering in general, because it has this aspect of being multidisciplinary. There are so many different disciplines working at the same thing, the same time, so many different people. So I think you won't usually see the same day every day, but in principle, you do the same things in terms of, you know, the big stuff, models, markups, drawings, meetings. That's more or less what I do day to day, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Okay. A lot of people are also asking if the structural engineer is just a, let's say, calculation engineer, or is he also even more than that? I make it maybe that very, let's say, funny, because okay, as a structural engineer, you have just take the model of the architect, put it into your calculation tool and see if the design checks are correct or not. Yeah. But I think there's definitely more than just that.
If there is a more creative aspect, you would say, something that you can create rather than just follow someone else's path, you could say. Yes, I do think that there is like a big aspect in terms of how creative you can be, but you can be creative in terms of problem solving, I would say, rather than just like pure, you know, I have a white piece of paper in front of me and I can just do whatever I like. It doesn't work like that. Like you have your own limitations, which might come from the architect. But I do think that creativity comes from limitations. Usually from my side, from my life, I feel that I have always been the most creative when I was given specific limits, like boundary conditions. You can only move within those boundaries. You cannot go outside. Otherwise, I found it quite difficult to be creative. So there is this creative aspect there. It's just not necessarily how people that are outside of this profession might think or would believe it is. It's more boundary conditions, but it's still problem solving. You have to solve problems. And in order to solve some problems, you have to be creative sometimes, I would say.
Mm-hmm. All right, pretty interesting. So, of course, every one of us started into the career, the professional career. And especially at the beginning, there are always a lot of questions, new things to learn. And probably also, let's say, some mistakes you have done in your early career. So in order to give some, let's say, feedback for the future engineers, because we have also a huge community who are listening to this podcast, who are still studying or maybe in the early part of their career. What do you think? What were, let's say, your three biggest learnings, maybe even mistakes, where you have learned the most as structural engineer?
My three, you're giving me a lot. Like, you're sure. Making it more difficult for me.
Sure.
Okay, my
always
three. Okay, so let me think. I think the first one, okay, so especially when you are early in your career, you haven't developed your confidence that much. So that can lead to some issues. One of the issues is, let's say you're given a task to fulfill. You have to design a beam, whatever it might be. Sometimes what you will find is that you are stuck at some point. You cannot just continue because you don't understand what the process to finish, to complete the task is. Now, one mistake that a lot of people do, and I have done it in the past as well, and it's usually because of lack of confidence, is that you don't go around asking people because, you know, you're like, okay, I'm stuck here. I need to proceed. I need to progress with this task. But I cannot do this alone. I need someone that is more experienced, more senior than I am. So I would say that one issue is that people don't ask. They're afraid of asking, or they're like stressed about it because they feel that they might seem inadequate to their colleagues. No, that shouldn't be the case, because the only way for you to learn is to ask stuff. And first of all, I think what I always say at this point of my life is ask all the stupid questions. The more stupid the question, the better the question. But in order for that to happen, you have to find people that do not judge you for stupid questions. You have to find those people and stay with them, which these people I usually call mentors. Personally, I like calling them mentors. So I would say that this is a very, very big thing for me, asking questions. I have made this mistake not to ask questions. You have to do that. This is the first one. The second one would be over-relying on software, actually. And again, this has to do with confidence as well. When you don't have enough confidence to do something by hand, per se, or to read a guideline from Concrete Center or from the Eurocoach, whatever it might be, you don't have that necessary confidence. What you tend to do is that you start modeling stuff. And then you're like, okay, I modeled it. And then you go to your senior engineer, for example, and you're like, okay, I have modeled it. This is what I have found. And what you will usually find is that something hasn't gone right. Usually it might be your supports, or it might be your joints between your members, whatever it might be. But this is the issue, that when you don't have confidence, you are over-relying on software because you are expecting it to do your work for you. It doesn't work like that. It will do some work. It doesn't mean that this work will be correct. So I think that's another thing. Do not over-rely on software. The software is the tool, but then you are the designer. That's the second thing that I have made in the past. And the third one, I have to find the third one now. Wow, that's difficult. Third one. There will be something, certainly, but I cannot figure out something very specific right now, to be honest. But certainly there will be, because I'm very prone to making mistakes, to be honest with you. I'm very prone to that.
Yeah, because only when doing mistakes, in my opinion, doing mistakes, you have the biggest learning and also place to improve yourself. So basically, this is pretty important. I don't know how you feel when doing the first structural calculations and structural analysis after graduating from school, but I was thinking, hey, look, I know the design checks, I have learned the Eurocode, and I was pretty good in structure analysis. But when I arrived at my first job doing simple designs, let's say for simple houses, yeah, it was so difficult, because I have heard from a lot of things not in my study. For instance, yeah, how to apply load, how to calculate, let's say, load setups or load layers of from different, let's say, live loads I apply on, let's say, some concrete slabs or some roofs. And I've never done this in the study. And when I arrived, I thought, oh, okay, never heard of that. I don't know how much I should apply here. So Have you also faced something like that when you started your career, or have you faced some other, let's say, challenges, especially at the beginning as a young engineer?
I think one big difference between us is that I have started in a worse case than you did, actually. So because when I started, I hadn't seen anything regarding structural engineering for 7 years, more or less. So you said that you knew all the theoretical stuff when you started. I had forgotten everything. So I had to relearn everything from scratch. So it was really, really, really challenging for me. Like whatever you described, I had already forgotten. So for me, I would say that when you start working, it's quite challenging because the theory behind what you apply in reality is completely different in our sector. The applied part of our science is completely different to the theory. So, and you cannot learn that in the university. It doesn't work like that. So I think that for me, it was a very, very challenging period of my life when I started working in the industry. It was. But at the same time, I had people around me that wanted, really wanted to help me develop who I am as a professional and as a person as well. People that helped me, wanted to help me. So I think there was this culture of safety. You can ask whatever you like, whenever you like, and we will try to help you as much as we can. So this culture of safety really helped me in that sense to, you know, fight that challenging aspect and learn stuff on the go and from scratch, actually. So yeah, I would say that for me, it was a really challenging time, but I was very, very fortunate to have colleagues that really wanted to support me. And I think that the culture, not only of a firm, because this thing exists, the culture of a firm, but it's much more important the culture of your team, of the people that you work with every single day. That's the important bit. It's good to be part of a culture that wants to help you, I think, especially as an early career professional, I would say. It's a big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the environment, the right environment that wants you to be successful is very important, that because then you feel also the support and they want also that you improve yourself. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Imagine we would have, let's say, someone who would like to change his path from career in civil engineering and now also wants to become a structural engineer. But he has to learn everything from scratch because, okay, maybe he has studied civil engineering, but yeah, it's a long time ago. Is it still possible to learn structural engineering from scratch? And if yes, what would be your strategy to learn this from scratch? Are there specific points, maybe specific topics you would to choose and maybe you would neglect? How would you, what would you suppose?
Yes, first of all, it is because I'm an example exactly of that, yes. So there is a way, yes. That's one thing. The second thing is that what I would propose to do. So this is something that I have mentioned quite a lot on my LinkedIn profile as well. So I think that Eurocodes, you know, all these guidelines are inherently difficult to understand. I still believe that, like that hasn't changed in my mind. So I usually tend to find much easier to follow guidelines from different institutions. Like in the UK, we have the Institution of Structural Engineers, per se, which gives great guidelines, great manuals. We have the Concrete Center as well, which gives great, very easy to follow step-by-step processes when it comes to designing. So I would say that for me, what helps if you want to learn something from scratch again is to start by reading those publications from the big institutions, because they know, even those institutions, they know that the Eurocodes are not very easy to read. So this is exactly why they found this gap in the market and they're like, okay, we're going to help our engineers understand the processes better. So I would say that this is a great way to start. Apart from that, of course, it's exactly what I said earlier. You need to always ask things around you. Always, always. This is of the utmost importance. Always. Find the right people and ask the most stupid questions you can. that's, I think, these two things I would follow again, because I followed them early on in my career and I was fortunate enough to, you know, be able to see them, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, never stop asking. Yeah. The whole life is a learning. All right. So now, apart from, let's say, your, let's say, challenge of learning everything from scratch as structural engineer, now looking into a real challenge of, let's say, maybe some specific projects. Do you have here a specific project in your mind where you think, oh, this was very, very difficult, but there I really challenged myself and I'm very happy to succeed it? Is there something in your mind, a project?
There is one. I think it would be relatively unprofessional of me to say which one exactly it is. I cannot say, but there is one mega project that I was fortunate enough to work on in the past. So a really, really, really difficult project, in which I think every day, I think there was something like 25 to 30 structural engineers or structural technicians that were working on full time, like huge. And we're talking only about one discipline, We're not talking about any other discipline. A very, very big project that I was very, very fortunate enough to work on. Very difficult. But one thing, I think that I was very fortunate enough to learn from that project, which I hadn't learned in the past, because you cannot learn that from very or smaller projects in smaller scale. So that project spanned in the design process for 4 to 5 years before I started working on it. Already 4 to 5 years in the design stage. So one difficult thing when you have like these huge projects is that, first of all, how do you manage information? How do you store it? How do you find it? Because, you know, during those 4 to 5 years, people leave the firms. They go to different teams or they leave the firm completely. So you need to figure out ways in order to properly store information, being able to figure it out, to figure out exactly where it is. Like, I did some designs back then. So I need to figure out how to properly store them so that in 2 years from now, potentially, if someone wants to see that design that I made, you know, the parameters, the assumptions that I made, because something changed in the project, something changed. So my design has to change as well. They need to figure out where everything is. So I remember times where I had to ask 5 or 6 different people to tell me where something is located. That's huge. So I think I learned quite a bit on that project, especially when it comes to organizing people, organizing information, organizing calculations, everything. And yeah, I think that was a very pivotal moment for me to understand exactly what the difference is between a huge project and a large project. So
you mentioned 30 engineers?
And technicians at the same time, all together. All together.
Wow, okay. And from the same company or from, let's say, other companies?
Same company.
Okay. Yeah, maybe then the, what would you say, is the communication easier when you're all, let's say, in a wrong company? No, I mean,
it's not easier if you are that many people. If you are in the same company, yeah, of course it is. Yes. But if it's like, even if it's like 30 people, that's still a huge number, I guess. But if you are from the same company, yes, communication is certainly easier. Yes, because you can just call whoever you like, whatever you like. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And how do you manage it? So who is responsible then for which part of the structure, let's say for the structure analysis? Is there, okay, hey, look, you are for the foundations, you are for that section of the building, you are for that part of the building. Is it like that? How can you imagine the responsibilities of these people?
From my experience from that project, it was mostly different buildings. It wasn't one building. It was like 5 or 6 buildings. So basically what you had back then was that you had a lead designer for each building, and beneath that lead designer, there were a few different engineers. And beneath those engineers, there were specific technicians. So basically you have a tree That's how it works. For each building, you have one lead designer. Through that designer, there are different designers. That's my experience from that specific project.
Mm-hmm. And regarding the project management, because I had also, let's say, recently some conversations with people here in Germany who are focusing on helping other planners or even construction companies to manage projects very good and even better. How can I imagine the project management in your case? Very simply, I think it's very huge, this topic, but maybe just to break it down in some sentences, how can I imagine the huge project management of such a huge project?
I wouldn't want to be in that position, probably, but it seems quite tricky, quite difficult to manage such a huge project. From my very little experience, because I don't have experience in project management, but from what I have seen, so you essentially have someone that needs to oversee every single discipline, more or less, what they do. And that takes huge amount of knowledge when it comes to designing. Like, before I saw this project, I thought that, you know, potentially you can become a project manager without being amazing in designing, without knowing everything design. That's not the case, especially when you talk about this specific project. You need someone that is great in designing and that is very good in managing people, because our profession is not about concrete. Our profession is about people. That's what I believe, at least. So I think you need someone that has a lot of skills, not only when it comes to technical stuff, but when it comes to people skills. It's very difficult to balance all these things at the same time, I think.
Mm-hmm. Okay, very interesting. I would have one last question about structural engineering, and then I would move to another topic. So what would you say? What are, let's say, really the So some challenges when doing structural design and structural calculations? Yeah, especially when also working with programs, I have always heard, yeah, okay, to find here, let's say, the right boundary conditions, okay, which kind of supports, have I considered the right stiffness, have I applied the load, did I forget the self-weight, yeah, all these questions. Do you have here kind of, let's say, top three? Now I give you a second chance with a top three.
It's always the three.
It's only the three, yeah. But I think. Yeah.
So when it comes to modeling, you would say. So yeah, first of all, it's exactly what you mentioned. Have I considered the right type of support? That's one very, very big thing, especially if you want to model something that is part of a bigger structure, let's say. Because if you have a very big structure and you model everything, more or less you will know the supports. But if you want to model one specific part, you have to know all the supports around it. So that's one thing. The second thing I would say is that connections. I find it so many times that the connections I make, instead of being pinned, are fixed, or, you know, the opposite. Or I will forget that I have to make this connection, I can't deliver, and the backspan, I have to fix it. I forget all this stuff. So all of the time, I have issues with connections between members all the time. So that's a second thing. A third thing, again, is this the third thing. It's so tricky. It's so tricky. You're making it more difficult for me. The third thing. One thing that I find tricky sometimes, if you want to, let's say, create an output with all your reaction forces, for example. Like, not every single model can give you specifically the output you want in a CSV format, for example. So you have to go by hand, one by one, to figure out exactly. And if I have, let's say, 150 columns, okay, if I want to just take every single reaction from every column, it's going to take me some time. So, yeah, I think every single software has its own uniqueness in that type of stuff. Some software are better at output, some others are not. So you have to figure out what the positives and what the negatives of each software that you are using at the same time are, I would say, which needs a lot of experience, I think.
Mm-hmm. When talking about software, let's say a lot of people tend to use or tend to model only 3D. Yeah, because, okay, 3D, I can capture everything. But when talking to, let's say, a very experienced structural engineers, they say, oh, why 3D? I have done this in former times just by 2D, and it worked the same way. Yeah. In my opinion, it's maybe something in between, yeah, between 2D, 3D. But what is your experience of that?
When I first started modeling stuff, it was always 3D, exactly what you're saying right now. Always 3D, always, even if it's not needed. But I think with time and, you know, with experience, you start going to 2D as well. So you're starting to try to simplify things, because the more you simplify something, the easier it is for you to interrogate that thing. It's much easier, first of all. So there is no cost in time, and there is not that much cost in mistakes. There are not exactly because it's a simplified model. Your mistakes are not going to be that many. It's much more easy for you to interrogate it. So that's why I think when you're in experience, you don't really understand that. So you go to 3D because you're like, okay, 3D resembles reality much more than 2D. So why don't I do that? But that's not usually the case. Not usually the case. If it's not needed for whatever the reason. Mm-hmm.
All right, good. Now let's leave a little bit the topic of structural engineering move. We will dive now a little bit more to our general construction industry, engineering maybe in itself, because I see that you're also very interested in innovation trends, new technologies, and engineering has made great strides towards modernization in recent years. What are, let's say, the technologies or maybe method techniques in the construction industry you have, let's say, seeing right now, and where you see also a big future, or what is quite interesting?
So I would say that an innovative method for me is basically reusing material. What do I mean by that? So usually in our industry, you know, the norm is when you design a building, what you have in mind is that that building will be demolished in the next 50 or 100 years. That's what we usually have in mind. So that's how we design something. Now, there is a different way of thinking that is starting to happen. I don't know about like Europe and Germany, where you are located. But in the UK, there is a different way of thinking that is starting to happen right now, which is more or less, we have to design something and we think about it in terms of not demolishing it in the future, but deconstructing it so that we can reuse some of the members that we can use, you know, columns, beams. If it's like, for example, a steel framed structure, you can just be like, okay, in the next 50 years, even all of these members will be reusable. So why don't I do that? Because first of all, theoretically, because it's a bit more complex than that, it's a bit more complex, but theoretically, you won't need to pay as much as for a new, let's say, steel member. Theoretically, it's more complex. But at the same time, you don't need to create more material and you don't, you know, produce CO2. So it's a more sustainable way of seeing things. It's a more resourceful way. So that's one thing that I really like about the UK specifically, because there is this way of transitioning to this, trying to design something in order to deconstruct it rather than demolish it.
Yeah. So to keep it, let's say, in the circular environmental economy. Yeah. So maybe at first planned as office building, but then from this office building, you can also do residential or even, let's say, a parking building. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Okay. So I just another type of usage of this building. But
not only that, you can just deconstruct it and just use, okay, you know, those members somewhere else, completely somewhere else. You can do that. Stuff like that happen in the UK. It's not the prevalent, it's not the norm, but it does happen. Because even if you deconstruct something, if you know, if you have a beam that hasn't deflected 35 millimeters, for example, you can potentially reuse it if it doesn't have like something that affects the structural integrity of it. So it does happen. Just reuse it somewhere else.
Mm-hmm. Okay, interesting. Good. And are you also facing, let's say, some trends or innovations where you think, okay, quite nice, but it's very difficult that it will be successful? So do you see also some risk at some specific trends, technologies?
Yes, but I'm not going to be very original about it. I think I would say AI for me right now, at least specifically in our industry, because you see, in my mind, AI has been very successful in some industries like marketing, for example, because someone can just write a copyright, can just write, like, ask ChatGPT, can you write for me this post for LinkedIn because we want to advertise our product, whatever. So it's very easy for ChatGPT to create something that is relatively okay when it comes to copywriting. However, the same thing doesn't really apply yet, at least in our industry. You don't have something that can just design a member and be like, okay, the calculations are correct. I have done some, let's say, testing when it comes to designing stuff, and even more simple examples, I would say. And I think we're not yet there. So our industry hasn't yet implemented AI, and that's for a very, very good reason, because AI doesn't really work the way that we're expecting it right now. Plus, I would say that there is a safety issue there. I'm assuming that, you know that like AI can lie. We know that from papers that AI has, you know, that aspect of it can try to lie to you, to the user. So if we have something, a tool like AI that can potentially lie to you in our industry, which is so much focused on health and safety because people's lives are on our shoulders, it's difficult for us to just implement AI, to use an AI tool if it's a black box. If I don't know what it's thinking right now, it's difficult for me to trust it. So it needs a lot of thinking and a lot of reviews and a lot of checks on what it has done. So it's tricky right now in our industry to implement it completely, I think.
Absolutely, especially when the AI takes the knowledge from somewhere where you don't have, let's say, the power of controlling that knowledge. Yeah, because then it can happen that the AI hallucinates, that they say some sentences, gives you some results only to, let's say, make you feel satisfied. Yeah, and because you want to have an answer. But at the end, it can be also even wrong. And this is also something which can be very tricky. But in my opinion, when we can manage it, that the AI is using really knowledge which is verified by, let's say, our use cases or by our company or by our knowledge, then I think it can be very, very helpful.
If you train it, you know, I'm assuming that you have so much data that you can work with. So if you train it with your own specific data, I'm expecting that, you know, the output it will give you, it would be much, much higher quality of a general LLM like ChatGPT. It will be of much better quality. Yes, I can certainly agree with that.
All right, good. So now, interesting question for you. Imagine you would have one wish free to change something in the, let's say, construction industry or even in the structural engineering world. This wish, what would it be?
I think it would be to focus more on people than concrete. I think so. I think that would be my wish. Because again, it comes back to what I said earlier. I do believe that our industry is about people. It's not about concrete. It's about people. And yeah, I think that would be my wish. Yeah. Because, you know, I have been fortunate in my career to be around very, very good colleagues. Not everyone has had the same fortune as I have.
All right, cool. All right, Thanos. Now to my most favorite question is about your favorite project or building. Do you have here something?
Yeah, I do. And again, I'm not original at all. I'm the least original person out there, I think.
Okay, so I was thinking about something specific from Greece. Yeah, some, let's say, antique building.
No, I don't think Greece is very famous about its architecture or its structural, engineering.
From further
maybe
times.
Structural engineering.
Okay. Yeah.
Ah, yeah. The Parthenon.
Your temples.
No,
and so.
No. Yeah. Close enough.
Okay.
So for me, it would be the Sydney Opera House, actually, which has been designed by Arup, which is a firm that I'm working for right now. And I think, to me, what the Sydney Opera House symbolizes for the most part is technical excellence. But it's not only technical excellence for me. It's like, you know, this passion of trying to go beyond your limits and this passion to finish something, whatever the cost, you have to finish that because it needed 16 years to be finalized, you know, from design to construction. So a lot of, you know, difficult times happen, you know, through the lifetime of that project. But that's what symbolizes to me. It's like, whatever the difficulty, you have to persevere and continue and finalize that, I would say. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Have you ever been to Sydney and visited?
No, it's quite far for me.
Okay. Yeah, so I said to everyone who has, let's say, his favorite building and project, he have at least to visit it once in his life.
I should. You're right. Thank you very much. I should.
All right, Thanos. I want to say thank you very much. It was a real pleasure to have you here in my podcast, and for the future, I wish you all the best and take care of you.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure for me too. I hope you saw it, and hopefully people will see it, how much of a pleasure it was for me as well. And I'm wishing you all the best in your life. Thank you.
Thank you very much.